In this lecture of Unit 5, Component 2, we will discuss summarizing evidence. The idea behind summarizing evidence is that for many tests and treatments, there are multiple studies, such that one study does not tell the whole story. One study may contradict others, or studies may complement each other and build up to make a much stronger case. For this reason, there has been a growing trend towards what are called systematic reviews or evidence reports that aim to bring all the evidence on a given test or treatment together. Remember the Haynes 4S model? It had studies at its foundation, then had syntheses and synopses that brought the data together and made it available to users, particularly clinicians, in a highly digested form. Summarizing the evidence is not just going out and collecting a few studies and bringing them together. There are methodologic challenges in summarizing the evidence. Such challenges were recently elucidated in a supplement to the journal Annals of Internal Medicine, making one realize the methodology that is required to do summarization of evidence. If we're going to create a systematic review, what are the steps? Guyot, in a textbook on evidence-based medicine, describes the steps in creating a systematic review. First, we have to define the question as it pertains to the population, intervention, comparison where appropriate, and outcome. Essentially, define the clinical question. We then conduct a literature search. We have to define the information sources we are going to use and come up with a search strategy. In a systematic review, a literature search is not just typing a few terms into Medline. We have to conduct a comprehensive search of the literature and cast a broad net. This will ensure that we retrieve many articles, so we can then appropriately include what usually turns out to be a relatively small number of articles. But we have to perform the broad literature search to have the opportunity to evaluate a large number. We then develop inclusion and exclusion criteria for the articles that we retrieve in our search. Most steps along the way have measures of reproducibility, so typically the Medline records with their titles and abstracts, as well as the full text articles that are chosen to analyze further, are typically done in duplicate to determine whether different individuals evaluating the same article come up with the same judgment. Once we identify the articles that we are going to use in the systematic review, we abstract the data from them and then conduct the analysis. For example, if we are going to perform a meta-analysis, we determine the method of pooling and explore heterogeneity of the results. So we explore whether some results point in one direction of a treatment and other results point in another. We also assess for publication and other types of bias. What kind of results do we obtain from a systematic review? Systematic reviews often use meta-analysis, where the results of multiple studies that are appropriately similar are combined. If you have multiple studies that have looked at, for example, the use of a treatment in a disease with a certain patient population, it is appropriate to combine these in a meta-analysis, which in essence gives you more statistical power. It is easier to achieve statistical significance, and you are pooling data from different studies, but from studies that are similar. You do not have to do a meta-analysis in a systematic review. In fact, if the studies are too heterogeneous because there are different patient characteristics, different settings, or other factors, it would be inappropriate to combine them in a meta-analysis. In systematic reviews, looking at telemedicine, for example, it is difficult to do a meta-analysis when one telemedicine study is a dermatology study, the other one is a radiology study, and another is a psychiatry study. When systematically reviewing the evidence for improved patient outcomes or improved ability to do diagnosis using any kind of telemedicine, it would be inappropriate to combine all the studies, though it would perhaps be possible to combine a few studies in some areas. In the case of telemedicine, however, these studies were quite heterogeneous. When we do a meta-analysis, we use a summary measure that gives us an indication of the treatment effect. We use either the odds ratio or the weighted mean difference, which we will explain in the next slide. In discussing the meaning of summary statistics, the odds ratio is used for binary events. Many studies are reported in terms of how they reduce certain events that we are trying to avoid, such as death, certain complications of a disease, the development of myocardial infarction, or someone who has high blood pressure, or the development of kidney disease, or someone who has diabetes, or a recurrence of a disease, or the reemergence of cancer that might occur after initial treatment. Usually, the odds ratio statistic is configured when it is less than 1, which indicates there is a benefit for treatment. This is the approach, for example, that the Cochrane collaboration uses, which we will talk about later in this lecture. When the odds ratio is less than 1, then there is benefit for the treatment, and it turns out, when the confidence interval does not include the odds ratio equals 1 line, when it does not cross over that line, our results are statistically significant. We can actually calculate in a somewhat complicated formula the number needed to treat from the odds ratios, so we can translate odds ratio findings into something that have a little more meaning from a practical standpoint. The other summary statistic is weighted mean difference. This statistic is used for numeric events such as measurements, such as blood pressure value or blood sugar value. The weighted mean difference is usually configured such that a value less than 0 indicates that there is a treatment benefit, and a value of greater than 0 indicates that there is benefit for the control intervention. Just as an odds ratio value of greater than 1 indicates that the control is of more benefit. Again, if the confidence interval crosses over the weighted mean difference equals 0 line, or if it does not cross over that line, it means that the results are statistically significant. Let's look at some examples of systematic reviews, in particular, systematic reviews of the treatment of cardiac risk factors. There were a group of meta-analyses that were published in the early part of the last decade, finding benefits for lowering cholesterol either with statin drugs or with other types of drugs or other interventions such as diet, blood pressure, and homocysteine. In fact, the combined publication of these meta-analyses led to a proposal for developing a so-called polypill that would contain 6 medications, a statin, 3 blood pressure-lowering drugs in half their standard dose, a beta blocker, folic acid, and aspirin. The authors argued that this could potentially reduce cardiovascular disease in Western countries by 80%. Not everyone agreed that giving everyone this pill would have this beneficial of an outcome. In fact, many argued that it would need to be subject to a randomized controlled trial. There was much correspondence in the British Medical Journal and elsewhere about the polypill. One suggestion was the notion of a poly meal that would not only be natural and safe, but even tastier, by giving people appropriate dosages of wine, fish, dark chocolate, fruits and vegetables, garlic, and almonds. The polypill has actually been developed and is in initial clinical trials done in India. The trial has not gone on long enough yet to look at outcomes, but it has shown that this pill does lower blood pressure and cholesterol beneficially. The Cochrane Collaboration is an important international initiative with the aim of preparing and maintaining systematic reviews of the effects of healthcare interventions. The main focus of the Cochrane Collaboration is on interventions and not diagnosis or harm unless the harm takes place in the context of an intervention or prognosis. There is information, including the abstracts of all the reviews that the Cochrane Collaboration has produced, on their website at www.cochrane.org. The main product of the Cochrane Collaboration is the Cochrane Database of Systematic Reviews. The Cochrane Collaboration and the database get their names from a British physician, Archie Cochrane, who stated in 1972 that it's surely a great criticism of our profession that we've not organized a critical summary by specialty or subspecialty adapted periodically of all relevant randomized controlled trials. The Cochrane Database of Systematic Reviews, the Cochrane Collaboration, embodies the vision that Archie Cochrane had. The Cochrane Collaboration has been a mostly volunteer effort, and it has produced about 2,000 systematic reviews in about a decade of existence. The 2,000 reviews only cover a fraction of medicine and do not cover medicine really on a comprehensive basis. Many people wonder how sustainable the Cochrane Collaboration and its database and other products will be over time. A Cochrane review is a systematic review, so there is a statement of the clinical problem or question and sources of evidence, which are typically gathered from a literature search. A small number of Cochrane reviews also include non-experimental data, although that is somewhat controversial. The inclusion and exclusion criteria for evidence are stated. The results are presented in both tabular and graphical form in a variety of ways. Next are the conclusions that come from the review. If there is meta-analysis, the results of the meta-analysis will be described. Because Cochrane reviews are meant to be more of a database rather than a static document, they include the date of the last update, both the last time anything was done, as well as the last substantive update or significant new evidence that was added to the review. The Cochrane reviews are meant to be dynamic, living documents, not just a review that gets published in a journal somewhere that may get updated a few years later. The goal is for the Cochrane reviews to be continuously updated. There are many other sources of synopses available. We'll talk about these more in a future unit. You may have seen the publication Clinical Evidence, which bills itself as an evidence formulary. It draws on Cochrane reviews and other syntheses and individual studies to essentially summarize the evidence. Another resource is InfoPoems, with poems standing for Patient-Oriented Evidence That Matters, which also is a collection of synoptic evidence. And then another effort is the Peer Resource, the Physician's Information and Educational Resource from the American College of Physicians. Of course, there are some limitations of systematic reviews and summarizing evidence. There are some people who believe that the use of meta-analysis is misguided. Alvin Feinstein is a well-known epidemiologist who has written in many places about his concern with meta-analysis. He has actually called it statistical alchemy. We do sometimes see meta-analyses on the same topic, including many of the same studies, but reaching different conclusions for a variety of methodologic reasons. One study also looked at the so-called half-life of knowledge, or how quickly knowledge became overturned. The domain of liver disease and meta-analysis actually had the shortest half-life, so when something was found to be the truth by meta-analysis, that truth lasted a shorter period of time than something discovered in a randomized controlled trial. Of course, publication bias may be exacerbated in systematic reviews because systematic reviews, in essence, are a sampling of studies and they represent the spectrum of research done on a given topic. If there is publication bias, then the systematic reviews are going to be more compromised because they rely on information being appropriately published. When there is publication bias, it may lead us to draw incorrect conclusions from systematic reviews.